Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.
You're listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. Yes, I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from Unity Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Today I welcome Unity minister, author, professor, and radio show host Paul Hasselbeck to the show. I think Paul is somewhere in the known universe on a curb outside of Starbucks right now, which is quite a fitting place, really, I guess, for our show. I don't know. Paul's latest book, co-authored with William M. Heller, and also a Unity minister, is entitled Unity and A Course in Miracles, Understanding Their Common Path to Spiritual Awakening. And given the symbiotic and yet sometimes allergic relationship between Unity and A Course in Miracles over the years, it's great to finally get a book that addresses the two often complementary paths that have been sometimes misunderstood. So it's a fascinating book, fascinating, and I always enjoy to welcome Paul to my show today. So welcome, Paul. Okay, Paul disappeared from the known universe into the unknown universe, but hopefully he's going to come back toot sweet and join us. Let me tell you a little bit about the book while we wait on him. It's just recently published, and like I said, it compares and contrasts Unity and A Course in Miracles and notes more commonalities than differences. And I think certainly when I was in ministerial school, we had lots of discussions about, you know, whether the Course in Miracles was Unity material, whether it was compatible. And some people said absolutely, and others would say, no, it's much more absolutist than Unity. It talks in more defined terms about the unreality of the physical universe, whereas we in Unity have a more relativistic view. And I think that's true to a degree, but I think there's a spectrum in Unity of people all the way from the ultimate absolutist, which just believes that, you know, there's only God, there's only mind, and then the more relativist approach that the physical has a certain reality. It's not just illusion. And we're going to be discussing that today with Paul, because I think that's an important subject. You know, what is the nature of the physical universe? And I was just looking up various aspects of Buddhism, and Buddhism also addresses this. You know, we accept the idea, and the Buddhists accept the idea that the physical is conditional. It's without ultimate substance. It's empty, as they say. It's subject to time and change. But does that make it an illusion? And some Buddhist schools of thought say, no, it has a relative existence, but we misunderstand it. We don't see it for what it truly is. Others say there is only the mind and everything else is an illusion. And so when we see the universe correctly through our spiritual awareness, then we no longer perceive it as a physical thing. It becomes God. It becomes empty. Have we got Paul back with us now?
Yes, I switched to my own hotspot because I got dropped.
Okay, well, we were talking about one of the subjects that intrigues me, and that is the nature of the physical universe and whether it is actually an illusion or whether it's simply illusory and that there is a certain relative existence to it. And I was comparing that to Buddhist thinking. You know, the Buddhist thinking says that everything is that we observe is conditional, subject to time and change, and therefore inherently empty. But I was also saying there's various interpretations of that. You know, some Buddhists think that there is only mind, that there's only the consciousness, and everything else is part of that. And others say that, no, there is a relative truth to physical existence. And I want to get into that later in the show because, that to me, that's an important point. And I want your ideas on that. But before we get there, let's back up a little bit and talk about the origins of Unity and A Course in Miracles. Because Unity, of course, Paul started, what, about 125 years ago? And then the course, though, is something from the 60s and 70s, right?
Yeah, so I think it was, like, received in the 60s and didn't really start getting published in one way or another until the mid to late 70s.
Right.
And really didn't catch on until the 80s and 90s.
Yeah. And I was saying that, you know, when I was in ministerial school, we often had discussions. Sometimes they got quite heated, you know, about whether A Course in Miracles are compatible with Unity, and were they the same basic ideas, or were they diametrically opposed? And I think there was a lot of misunderstanding, perhaps, because nobody'd done a systematic comparison of the two, and that's why this book's so useful, I think. And what you're pointing out, ultimately, in this book, with your co-author, is that there are more commonalities than there are differences, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I think the teachings of both Unity and A Course in Miracles do kind of get lost in the haze of the very traditional Christian language that by its nature is dualistic. And both systems are trying to describe a non-dualistic capital R reality.
Right.
So it gets lost in the language is the only way I can say it.
And it seems to me A Course in Miracles has a very specific purpose, and that is to awaken people from the dream or the ego viewpoint, you know, where we don't see the reality as it is. We see it as we perceive it and seeks ways we can dissolve that seeming separation, right, and return to wholeness. And, of course, Unity does that, but it has other... It's sort of a broader theological system, if you like. The course is very much focused in that one direction. Is that right?
Well, yeah. So the way we talk about it in the book, and I really feel strongly about it, this is where they are in some ways distinct, and these distinctions create kind of a synergy that if a person actually... worked both systems, either one after another or together in some way, a person would get a better result. Because A Course in Miracles, as you so wisely said, is focused about undoing the ego's belief system while teaching us there is this oneness and a divine mind, and somehow we are that. And while Unity's focus is on developing our Christ consciousness, and it's a little bit about undoing the ego. So
right.
There's a synergy there that is really quite magnificent.
Right. They help each other, don't they? They complement each other in a way.
Yes.
And
I know.
I know a lot of people who study both because they find that, you know, what's missing perhaps in Unity, or there's, let's say, not missing, but isn't emphasized so much, is emphasized in A Course in Miracles. And then, likewise, what's not emphasized in the course is Charles and Myrtle cover quite deeply and distinctly. So therefore, you know, it fills in the gaps, if you like.
Yeah, and so kind of as a result of this, and my working them both, is that since the course has those 365 lessons that are basic denials and affirmations, they undo the ego thought system, the Unity has the 12 powers as a what I'm calling now an operating system for our minds to develop or regenerate Christ consciousness. And the problem around the 12 powers over the decades is their importance got lost, and I think even how to use them. So Cher Holt and I wrote that book, Power Up, and now I'm developing something even more granular about how we actually use these 12 powers to work with individual thoughts and beliefs in our minds. So I'm hoping that what we're doing with the 12 powers will now amp up the working together with the undoing of the ego belief system we find in A Course in Miracles.
Right. So both, like we said, have commonalities, especially around what God is. Both accept the Trinity, right? Our basic unity understanding of what the Christ is, that Jesus is not the only Son of God. He's the way shower to show us all how we can all be sons of God, that we can all have that Christ awareness, that Christ consciousness.
Yeah, but we have to be a little careful with saying both accept the Trinity. Both talk and use the language of the Trinity, but redefined each aspect of the Trinity. So that gets a little tricky. I don't want people to go away thinking that both Unity and A Course in Miracles believe in God the Father, Jesus Christ, and the Holy Spirit in a traditional way, because neither is traditional.
Right. So we have the metaphysical Trinity in Unity, don't we? Which we're familiar with, mind, idea, expression, if you like. And so does that picture in The Course in Miracles too?
So we do have God talked about as mind. We do have the concept that this Christ is divine of us. And the Holy Spirit in The Course in Miracles is defined as that part of our mind that's still awake to our divinity. And while the Course talks about it in very in terms as if it's an entity, if one really understands what the Course is saying, it's not an entity. It's a part of our mind we use to wake up, and I'm really clear about that. And Unity says a very similar thing, but unfortunately, the really good material on the Holy Spirit rests in the archives unpublished.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. If a person does a survey like I did of every instance of the words Holy Spirit across about 12 or 13 books, our historical texts are all over the place on what the Holy Spirit is. But there's one really, really, really good set of lessons called Releasing the Holy Spirit of God and Man that Charles taught to the ministerial students in the early 30s that is so cool. In it, one comes away with the idea that the Holy Spirit is the activity of the little M mind, our minds. It's the activity of our minds. It's the capacity of our minds to think, we could say. But it's not what the mind is focused on. Do you see what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. So it's a really cool set of lessons. So that's the sort of information I wish could see the light of day more. And Myrtle had a great definition of the Holy Spirit. It goes something like, the Holy Spirit is our awareness of the activity of God mind at the point of our minds.
And I love that.
Yeah, isn't it? It's really quite sweet. But everywhere else in the published text, one would come away thinking Holy Spirit was a being or entity of some sort.
I always like the idea that it's the executive power of the mind, that which has the energy and power to carry it forth. Because it reminds me of, in my Hindu studies, of Shakti, the Shakti energy, which is the energy that the limitless God gives to things to create manifestation. So Holy Spirit is similar to that. You know, it has the power to...
I'm really glad you reminded me of that executive power piece, because that's a piece I often forget, and that is such a cool way of thinking about the Holy Spirit.
I like that, yeah. Okay, there's some things, though, that I don't agree with, either Unity or Course in Miracles. So this concerns me, since I've been a minister now for many, many years in Unity, and I'm thinking, do I really believe in Unity? Because can I read a summary statement that we have here on page 25?
Sure.
This is the chapter on One Presence, One Power, What Is and What Is Not, and we're talking about non-duality and dualisms. Okay, the summary says the core premise underlying both A Course in Miracles and Unity is non-dualism. Of course, I accept that. All the teachings and practices rely on this one concept. There is only one power and one presence, period. God is real, unchanging, timeless, and unlimited. Okay, I'm on board. Now, and then we get to this. Anything that is changing of time or limited is unreal, an illusion, no matter how real they seem may seem to be according to our senses. Okay, so I part company on that one, because although I can accept that it is unreal in the sense that it does not have, you know, absolute truth, it's not going to be there forever, it's subject to time and change, etc. I see it as what the Hindus call Leela, the play, God's play. And you know, in the Buddhist tradition, they say samsara, the world of time and change, and nirvana, the world of the unconditioned, the free, are one, right? So therefore, it's not so much it's unreal as it is disguised. And it's still part of God. So in my theology, you know, in my cosmology, I would see that matter is conditional and relative, but it is still part of God. So I would not see it as unreal and an illusion. So does that make me a non-unity minister now?
Well, it's so funny. That I think many Unity ministers, when they really delve on this material and especially look at other spiritual paths, end up being quote unquote ununity at some level, and when comparing to the traditional teachings. However, that's where we step into. We are open and receptive to each person having their own belief system.
So right.
That might hold also for a Unity minister, and it's incumbent on each Unity minister to decide, I think, when it is they are now orbiting out beyond, this is a tricky term, normative unity.
And right.
As you know, I'm certainly on a sort of a lunatic fringe. So... because of my emphasis on the absolute,
and right.
So I wouldn't agree with you, but neither of us can prove which is right. So we just love each other and move on. But I think matter is what we manifest out of divine principle and law. And since it changes, it's not the principle in law, but couldn't exist without it.
Right. Well, I'm more of a Alfred North Whitehead process theologist, I guess, you know, in the sense that, you know, I think that God can change and unfold. And within that, you know, it's changeless and changing at the same time. It's sort of the ultimate paradox, you know, as the Bhagavad Gita says, it seems to move, and yet it moves not. There's that word seems there. You know, it's a play, it's illusory, but it's still of God. It's not separate. It's not a demiurge that creates this. And it's almost a Gnostic idea for me that we're in danger of descending into when you say that God didn't create the physical world. You know, we did. And so therefore you've got this idea of a demigod creating the world, and in distinction to this ultimate God. And so there's a dualism implied in that to me, you know.
So the problem with that is the way in which perhaps the word God is being interpreted, because when I say God didn't directly create the physical universe, I'm saying there's not a being or an entity that's doing it as traditionally understood. I'm saying that there are these laws and principles out of which the physical universe and we are manifested. And
right.
How that this happens, I have no clarity on that.
Right.
And those absolute laws and principles, meaning those that don't change, underlie everything. And
right.
And we have a parallel of that in the science. And so my sense of it is that there is that which is unchanging, let's call it law and principle for the unity perspective, and then what's changing of it is my understanding of it.
Right, and I can accept that.
My understanding of that is not changing the absolute. So in a sense, the my understanding of God immanent is that amount of the principle of law I can understand. And God transcended is that part I yet do not change. So I do not yet understand. So God isn't changing. My understanding of it's changing, and yet there's a dance there, as you described it.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Okay, folks. I'm with Paul Hasselbeck. We're looking at his new book, Unity and A Course in Miracles. Let's take a break. Listen to these messages from Unity, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes to talk some more. We've got a lot of book to get through here. It's fascinating.
Yes, we do.
As Unity Online Radio continues to expand its programming and outreach to the world, we count on the support of listeners like you. Please make your donation today. Go to www.unity.fm and click on Donate Now. The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find my God. I will leave this world as it is.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find my God.
You know the saying, a good deed is its own reward? Well, moving toward a plant-based diet and vegan lifestyle is one kind and compassionate act that isn't just its own reward. It will also reward you with vibrant health, boundless energy, an easy way to keep your weight where you want it, and according to yogis and Unity's co-founder Charles Fillmore, even give a boost to your spiritual life. On Main Street Vegan, the radio program named for the popular book, Victoria Moran will make your move in a vegan direction easy, fun, affordable, and delicious. With enticing topics and entertaining guests every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Central Time, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
All right, welcome back to today's show. I'm with Paul Hasselbeck, who's just consumed his seventh Doppio of espresso and is now climbing the walls of the Starbucks, but he's still with us. I think this is my most unusual phone call. I'm dealing with somebody that's walking around in different places, so this is good. This is fun. As Paul told me in the break, he's the original absent-minded professor, so that's excellent. We can roll with it, right? Before we move on, I just want to quote a quote that I love that I came across years and years ago from the Lankavatara Sutra, which is a sutra of the Buddhas. And the line is, nothing is as it seems, neither is it otherwise. And I've always loved the contradictory nature of that. You know, nothing is as it seems. Everything is different from, and the Course in Miracles talks about that. You know, nothing that we see has any meaning. We have to give it our own meaning, if you like. But the second line also says something very interesting. It says, neither is it otherwise. In other words, don't think you can find reality outside of what is already here, because if you perceive what's already here clearly, you will see the reality. So they co-inhere, if you like, even though they appear to be contradictory. For me, that explains this. You know, we may be living in an illusion, but there is a reality, and it's not somewhere else. It's here. It's right within the illusion. If we can perceive the thing correctly, then God opens up to us. Right? All the mystics have had these experiences where they see that everything is alive with God. You know, the bushes are flaming, the stones become alive. You know, it's Orient wheat. You know, the Thomas Traherne beautiful image of the playfulness of the spirits of people all around him. Ordinary things become transformed. It's a transfiguration, if you like. So I love that idea. Yes.
Well, I think it's a fascinating idea, and when you speak it, I love it as a metaphor pointing to something beyond the words.
Yes.
You know, the words are simply an attempt to describe really a mystical experience, and that it never grasps the what is anyway. And so we go from describing this paradox to trying to put words of what it seems and looks like to somebody. And even so, we still haven't nailed it. And isn't that the fun? That we never really nail what it is.
Right. You know, the Course in Miracles has a lovely concept of which we don't have in Unity, at least not laid out so distinctly. And that's this idea of the holy instant of, and I've always loved that, you know, because we talk about the timeless moment, right? The still point of the turning world, and Charles and Myrtle talked a lot about that, penetrating into that timeless place.
Yes.
But this idea of the holy instant is a little nuanced there, the difference, right? Talk about that, because I think that's a lovely idea, this holy instant.
Yeah, that holy instant, first of all, the language is exquisite, isn't it? And for me, it's describing that moment when I have if I put it in Unity language, realization, when I know that I know.
Yes.
And when I know that I know, I'm seeing that something that's beyond what my senses are perceiving.
And it creates a holy relationship, right, with God or with the person you're with or with nature or a tree or whatever. A bit like the I-thou relationship, you know, that Martin Buber talked about.
Yeah, well, so I'm not familiar with that Eastern language at all, but it is the holy instance that's the basis of the holy relationship.
Yes.
And in my understanding, the holy relationship is really about my relationship between you and me. To speak of holy relationship between God and I, really doesn't work for me because it isn't a relationship at all. It's a oneness. And in the Course's language, God doesn't know the separate me is here anyway.
Right.
Because God doesn't know me as separate.
So it would posit a distinction, wouldn't it, between us and God if we were in that sense of having a relationship. Although, you know, in terms of devotional practice, back to yoga from the East, but also a lot of the devotion that we see in Christianity, that there is that sort of intimate relationship with our own inner selves. You know, it's almost sexual. If you see some of the sculptures of Saint Teresa, the first Saint Teresa, you know, Saint Teresa of Avila. Now we have a second Saint Teresa.
I didn't think of it that way.
That's right. but the first one, you know, the Bernini sculpture, she's swooning as the darts of love, you know, penetrate her heart, and it's as intimate as sexual encounter. And I think Rumi, for instance, in the Islamic tradition, you know, in his poetry, also speaks to that sort of a visceral, emotional relationship with God. And so, you know, if you're a person that's very intellectual, it seems like, well, I don't know if I can get into this. But for those that approach God in that way, I think there can be that kind of relationship, right?
Well, there's a beauty in that. And so my intellectual side in understanding all of this is that that relationship that I have with the divine is a construct of my own imagination, in a sense, my own limitation. And even though that's my limited experience, at the same time, there is the oneness. So let me put it another way. So what I share with my students and the way I am myself is that my ego has conversations with itself all the time. I'm talking to myself all the time. And so I have a relationship with my ego. But who's the me having the relationship with my ego? And all the while I'm talking to myself, who's the myself I'm talking to? And at no moment do I believe there's actually two people talking to each other. In fact, that's probably pathological, and if I did think that, then I should probably see a psychologist or a psychiatrist.
That's
and
right.
So in a similar way, I can sit here and have a relationship with my divinity, with God, with Christ, however you want to talk about that, and at no moment do I believe there's another. It is me talking with me. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah, and so I totally get how Rumi could use this stunning language dripping with sexuality for this relationship, as I would describe it. He has created to understand the divine, and his innate desire to know the divine, and the cool thing about that. Is that if we go back to Jesus, and Jesus says we are to love the Lord our God with all our heart, with all our souls, with all of our minds, and I think in another place, with all of our strength, and then we're to love ourselves and love our neighbors, or love our neighbors as ourselves, and love our enemies. If we connect that to the 12 powers teaching, where we're in one understanding of it, love is our ability to desire, then it becomes, we desire God with all of our hearts and minds and strength and soul. And that puts that whole different spin on it. And I desire myself. Just think, if we desired ourselves, what that would do for the low self-esteem epidemic we have in our country. And, mm-hmm. and desire our neighbor, and desire our enemy. And I'm not saying in a sexual way, but we certainly could see how Rumi gets to that. That desire for God, that he describes it in a sexualized way.
Yeah, and I think we don't want to get lost in the literal meaning, because he talks about, you know, drinking wine as well, and of course, you know, a good Muslim never drinks wine. But he's talking about the intoxication that wine can bring you, and the being God intoxicated. Having that full-on relationship, you know, the speaking to the intensity of it, I think, is what we're talking about. Because so often we especially in Unity, sometimes we could have all these principles, and it gets real cerebral, you know, it gets dry. And I think in Unity, and I love the name of your book, you know, Heart-Centered Metaphysics, because it's not just head-centered, you know, it's heart-centered. And that speaks to this connection. By the way, there's a guy I really like. His name's Sailor Bob Adamson, and he's a non-dualist from Australia. Went to India back in the 70s and became, quote, enlightened. And now he teaches in Australia. But he calls it presence awareness. And I like that phrase, you know, this moment, this holy instant, this moment of recognition of our true self. We become part of presence awareness, and God himself, itself, is presence awareness. For me, that works. I love that phrase.
That works. I love that. Presence awareness. That,
right.
That is really quite exquisite.
Yeah, isn't that lovely? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because
it is
awareness, and it is presence, but when you put them together, there's a dynamism to it, you know, that is very beautiful, this idea of presence awareness, almost like the beholder in a traditional Christian sense, you know.
Yes, and if we just go back to the heart-centered metaphysics thing,
is that
a lot of metaphysicians don't talk enough or miss the point that it is the feeling nature that's the driver.
Yes.
You know, you can't manifest without the feeling side of things. And so the
let's
importance
move on
of
to,
that. It, go ahead.
I was going to say, let's move on to separation. You know, when I was in ministerial school, Ed Rabel and others were always keen to point out it's a sense of separation. It's not there is no separation in truth. It's the sense of separation. And this is so true, isn't it, that we are actually all is well. You know, we are that presence awareness, whether we realize it or not. And so the work is to move beyond that sense of separation, where we create, as the Course calls it, specialness, you know, limitations of some kind. And we all want to be spatial, don't we?
Yes, yes. Well, and the irony is, as I understand the Course, is that the Course teaching doesn't take the specialness away from us. It uses the specialness to wake us up, which is quite exquisite.
Like you said, to desire yourself, right?
Yes, it's
not a question of giving up yourself, abandoning yourself, but seeing yourself in your true light, in the true light of who you are.
Yes. Well, and I would say, because you know I'm a language monk, is waking up to what I am. Because if the divine isn't a being or an entity, the truth of me isn't a who, it's a what. As Imelda Shanklin wrote about very clearly in her book, What Are You?
Right.
And I think if we get this clarity of language, I think is important. and I really can't talk enough about it. I don't think I want to go off on a tangent for your show.
Yeah, but, well, but it's like, we could argue that one. I'm okay with what are you, but I also okay with who are you, because you know that's the a long and honored path of self inquiry. You know, that's Ramana Maharshi and a lot of psychoanalysts or psychologists have also, you know, pursued that. You know, I have a body, I'm not my body. I have a mind, I'm not my mind. You know, I am,
yeah,
etc. That kind of thing. So I'm okay with the who am I, but I take your point. Can I get to another page I really dislike?
It's your show.
This is a quote. This is a quote from The Course in Miracles, and I just read it and I thought, no, I don't believe this.
So this is the coolest thing, right? Is that, right, that we can look at this material and agree or disagree.
Yeah, well, it's not a question of whether I just don't like this particular line. Listen to it. It says, the world you perceive is a world of separation. Okay, I can buy into that, because generally what we see is we take to be our reality that which is, you know, subject to time and change, and we act like it isn't.
Yeah.
The world you made is therefore totally chaotic, governed by arbitrary and senseless laws and without meaning of any kind. Okay, I can't buy into that. That's like saying I'm a miserable sinner and everything I do is wrong. You know, because why is it governed by arbitrary and senseless laws? Because it seems to me there's a mix of erroneous understanding mixed up with correct understanding. And so it's not like it's awful without meaning of any kind. I think it has a certain meaning, but it may not be the full meaning. But I think to condemn it as a chaotic state, you know, that's what I got away from when I came into Unity. You know, I celebrated the fact that, you know, I'm living in a spiritual universe governed by spiritual laws, and I'm inherently a good person and can open myself to that good. But now I don't want to see that I'm creating chaos wherever I go.
Yeah, so what's really interesting about that, you and I are basically pretty much on the same page, and we can't ignore the fact that both A Course in Miracles and Charles Fillmore talk about some sort of something that happened, the fall in consciousness, and that,
right,
we're trying to get ourselves back to our perfection. And I no longer subscribe to this concept that's through a lot of teachings that we somehow erred, did something bad, and we fell in consciousness. I think we are ever-evolving expressions of goodness.
I love that. And that's what I subscribe to, too, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And even though Uni talks a lot about our original goodness and that we were quote-unquote made that way, there's clearly in the writings this concept that we erred somehow.
Right.
And that's why we must regenerate Christ consciousness. I'm not going there anymore. And so we're back to your question in the first segment. Are we stepping outside of normative unity? Well, as defined in the historic text, but there's nothing that says we have to cleave to the historic text because Charles and Myrtle wrote them. Or
exactly. Yeah. And he did talk a lot about regeneration, didn't he? Turning his physical body into a body of light and that whole thing. And maybe that's, you know, some of his traditional Christian background came through there a little more than some other parts of his theology.
Exactly. I think he was expressing some traditional embedded theology. And while regeneration is spoken of, like you said, of the body, it clearly... he spoke of the regeneration of the body had to be preceded by regenerating Christ consciousness.
Right.
So,
yeah.
So that sounds like nonsense to me now. And you know, all the time, or you don't know, all the time I'm teaching A Course in Miracles and teaching unity and teaching about this fallen consciousness and in Course in Miracles, somehow the Son of God had an error thought and forgot to laugh and blah, 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 blah. I was never comfortable with any of that because it made no sense to me. How could that which is perfect make an error?
Right.
And similarly in Unity. And so I'm so much more comfortable now with this idea that it's an ever-expanding goodness that we are.
And, you know, in terms of the ability to hold many different viewpoints, you know, in the same larger container, I think both Hinduism and Buddhism are good at this. You know, that I was saying at the beginning of the show while you were off the air for a moment, that, you know, the Buddhist view is that there is an inherent emptiness to everything that's we can see, to form, if you like. Form is emptiness. Yet the interpretation of that can be manifold. There's one view that, you know, the mind-only school, that there is only the mind, only consciousness, the absolutist. Yeah. And then there's other schools that would say, yeah, that the physical world has a relative existence, you know, but it's disguised, whatever. So the whole spectrum of views. And Hinduism, likewise, you know, has absolutist theologies, but also, you know, Shiva Shakti idea, which I talked about last week on the show. The idea of the unmanifest and the manifest nest in each other. You know, the universe couldn't be created unless Shiva and Shakti came together, the pure spirit, and then the idea of energy or manifestation dancing together like yin and yang that creates this universe. And I kind of like that concept as well. You know, another concept that fits in with Course in Miracles, I think, is the idea of Vishnu. You know, the preserver god Vishnu is lying on a bed of snakes, the great snake. On the ocean of emptiness, dreaming the world into existence. And,
isn't that great?
Isn't that a lovely image? You know, endlessly dreaming the world into existence, coiled on this great snake in the ocean of bliss. And so, you know, in that sense, as soon as the dream is over, you know, we're over, right? We're dependent upon the breathing out, if you like. That's another image that's used in India. Breathing out of God, and then when he breathes in, you know, dissolution, the end. It's a hall of mirrors, right?
Right, and at the same time, we are that which is breathing in and breathing out. So
we are that. Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
So this is where I've gotten in the last few years is that whatever a person is believing, if it's useful to them in some way and useful for the way that person shows up in the world, fantastic. Because we can't prove or disprove any of this. We're doing a dance with beliefs and personal experience of the divine, which we then put words to. So how is this useful for you in a way to be better and better to expand the expression of this goodness that does not have an opposite?
Right.
Or we could call it a divine benevolence, let's call it.
Yes, I love it. You know, it's interesting you should say that because that's exactly what my wife told me this morning because I was in energized by the book and looking forward to the show and talking about, you know, I don't know about this thing about the physical universe being unreal, etc. And she says, well, you know, there's different viewpoints on this, but how is it practical in your life? How does that make you live, more seamless life? And you can discuss this to the end. But, you know, wonderful words of wisdom, right?
Yeah.
And I think we all came into Unity, at least I'm generalizing, but I think most of us who were ministers and maybe many of our congregants came into Unity because we loved the fact that it was a way of life. You know, it was practical Christianity, right? That these things are efficacious in helping us live a fuller life. And both A Course in Miracles and Unity certainly do that. They succeed in that, I think.
Yeah. And so for me, where I've landed that's the most comfortable about the physical world, and is it illusion, and is it a dream, and whatever is, I certainly have a very real experience of the physical world and the events that occur in the physical world. And what is probably illusory is, and at least temporary, is my interpretation of the world I see.
Absolutely.
And the interpretation of the world I see is different than the world that you see or that Jeff behind the glass sees. And so the world I see is a fig Newton of my imagination. But that doesn't say there isn't a physical universe in some way. And that has become kind of a moot point.
Right.
You know, whether the physical universe is real or not. Who cares? I'm trying to become more conscious of my divinity and growing in that expansion of goodness.
I don't have
to argue about the physical universe. Who cares? The work is at the point of my consciousness.
You know, I think it's the same idea with time. You know, I think we'd probably agree, and I think the Course agrees and the Unity agrees that there is no time ultimately. You know, that we live in this timeless universe, and yet there's an appearance, isn't there? A very palpable appearance of time. And if you're a minister, for instance, you know, and you're dealing with people who are going through terrible transitions or pain or whatever, to say, oh, well, you're in a timeless moment, you know, you're free of all that. It's very cruel, actually, because you know you're when you're dealing with it, it's intensely real. So again, it's part of this both and. You know, ultimately we are free, you know, and unconditioned, and yet we are very much subject to all the vicissitudes of time and change.
Yeah. So it becomes again. So what about time? Well, since it seems to be happening. Now, how do I consciously use it to the best of my ability? I would say to give more, to expand the good more, and create win-win situations with the people around me. So why would I fight against this illusion of time if it's an illusion anyway?
How do I use the illusion? You can expand time, can't you? I know many people who have never got enough time. They're almost slaves to it. Other people seem to have all the time in the world, to quote a phrase. And what's happened? You know, they are using time effectively because it's flexible. It's not limited to the minutes and hours of the clock. It's spacious, and so you know you have all the time in the world. Absolutely, in reality.
Well, and that's a fun little exercise to give people to do as you go about your life. Notice when time seems to slow down and when it seems to speed up.
Yes.
And just be aware of it.
Yeah.
And then the next step is, what part were you playing in that? And then if you can figure that out, then how can you use that to your best advantage?
And who is doing all this? Your presence awareness, folks. It's that
your presence awareness.
Yeah, it's perceiving
exactly.
without conditions. You know, it just is. We're out of time. Wow, that show went by real fast.
What a wonderful discussion.
I hope we introduced the book enough for you that you want to buy a copy, because it really is quite fascinating. And these subjects are wonderful. Yeah, tell us a little more about how we can get it.
Okay, so it's available Amazon. It's available for Unity. It's now available as a Kindle version, so people can just go online and find it. And I just simply want to be real clear that what Bill and I were presenting is our understanding of normative unity and normative understanding of A Course in Miracles. It does not represent, certainly where I am theologically or in my spiritual philosophy, and that wasn't the purpose of the book.
Right, wonderful. And you've done a great job in staying normative, given that you are so radically out of the box.
Right. And I had my difficulties.
Yeah, I'm sure. Folks, next week I'm going to do a walkthrough of the Tao Te Ching, that fascinating text that's been translated more times than any other book in the world, I think, except the Bible. So let's look at the Tao Te Ching next week. Right now, I want to thank Paul Hasselbeck for being with me. It's been a wonderful show. Thank you, Paul.
Well, thank you, and thank you for being gracious with the craziness at the beginning of the program.
That was kind of fun. That was kind of fun. All right. Thanks for listening, folks, keeping this Voice of an Awakening World on the air and showing interest in that. And join me next week. And in the meantime, take care. All right. Bye-bye now.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
Does music open your heart and bring you peace and joy? Experience the sacredness of sound with Ramdesh Kaur as we travel the world of mantra, kundalini yoga, and devotional music. Join us for a journey into spirit, Thursdays at 4 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Eastern on Spirit Voyage Radio with Ramdesh. Only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Many of us have heard someone say, "I've learned my lesson, I'll never do that again." All too rarely do we hear, "That was a wonderful lesson. I'm glad it happened just the way it did, even though I was uncomfortable going through it. I now understand why I experienced the pain. With this new awareness, I can change my behavior so I won't make the same mistake in the future." We bear a good part of the responsibility for creating both the positive and the negative situations we experience in daily life. Wisdom comes from understanding the result of our choices and realizing that we can always choose differently. By fearlessly confronting the role you play and the experiences you may have just...
Welcome back to the...
Ever notice how the funniest things happen when we stop taking ourselves too seriously and step out boldly? Listen to Funniest Thing with Daryl and Ed as these unlikely saints administer a refreshing dose of laughter and love that will inspire you to step out boldly and experience the funniest things. Join the discussion with Daryl and Ed live every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Central Time on Funniest Thing, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Have you ever considered that everything you think, say, and do is a prayer to the universe? What would your life be like if you activated the power of yes? Join Reverend Beverly Molander and her exciting guests on Affirmative Prayer, Activating the Power of Yes, to find out how they activated the power of yes in their lives, their communities, or even the world. If they can do it, you can too. Listen to Beverly Molander and her guests live every Monday at noon Central, 1 p.m. Eastern on Affirmative Prayer, Activating the Power of Yes. Only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.